Could you tell me about your role with the UNESCO Global Steering Committee?
Sure. I have two hats that I'm wearing on that committee. The first of them is I'm a representative of the UNESCO member states for the Asia-Pacific region. And what's exciting about that, of course, is that it's a region that is just full of indigenous languages and indigenous people. So that's a pretty significant sort of representative role. And in addition to that, I co-chair the steering committee, myself and another member state representative and two indigenous peoples representatives are the co-chairs of the committee.
And in terms of the region, do you think that there is a big need for representation?
Oh, look, I think so. I think it's important that the region has a voice, particularly in the organisation of the various events that are happening across the course of this year as the International Year of Indigenous Languages, but also because there's a lot of good work happening in Indigenous languages in this region, and I would say particularly in this country, and obviously our friends and colleagues across the Tasman in Aotearoa.
And just in terms of this country, we're in Australia. What is the situation in Australia in terms of Indigenous languages, First Nation languages?
Well, as you know, at the time when the British arrived, let's use that term, shall we, in 1788, there were something between 200 and 300 Indigenous languages spoken on the mainland. And within that context, probably close to 600 to 800 dialects within those languages. So somebody put it to me recently this way: far from having a recent history as a multicultural nation since the end of World War II, we've got a 65,000 year history of being a multicultural place. And so we were diverse, multicultural, multilingual. Of course, jump ahead 230 years, and the situation is not quite so good, with very few of those languages now spoken on, about 120 in fact of those languages are spoken in the country, and of those about 90% of that 120 are considered at risk. So that's a pretty dismal picture, but what's exciting is that there is a lot of work happening to reinvigorate Indigenous languages. There's a lot of recording work going on. We have 22 Indigenous languages centres around the country that are funded and supported by the Commonwealth Government. Of course, there need to be more, but those language centres are vital in terms of language recovery and revitalisation.
Just on that recovery and revitalisation, at the community perspective, in terms of the people themselves using their language and the relationship between that and sort of emotional and cultural and social well-being, for instance, and reconciliation.
I think there's a clear link between our ability to use our traditional language, to speak in our... We at IATSIS, we've stopped talking about Indigenous languages and use the term Australian languages, because we want to really emphasise the fact that these are languages that are of this place and of this country. They're not sort of something quaint over here on the side.
Does that make a difference, do you think?
Look, I think it makes a difference about how we think about those languages. If we think about them, something happens to things when you attach the word Indigenous or you attach the word traditional. I think it's important that we understand that our languages as Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander people are fundamentally Australian languages, because that means there's something in this for the whole country. It's not just about what's good for Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander people, although it is unquestionably good for us to recapture the ability to speak in our languages, because as you'd be aware, languages carry they're more than just a means of communication. They carry ideas, they carry perspectives. The payoff in terms of helping all Australians to think in different and new and innovative ways about this place can only produce some lasting gain. I think it's a nonsense when people try to argue that the only way we can have social cohesion is if we all speak one language and we all kind of conform to one monolithic set of values that are inevitably not Indigenous.
So in terms of our reconciledness and moving forward, do you think this International Year may give it a platform, or what are your hopes to come out of this year as a CEO of IATSIS and also on the steering committee?
So I think there are a number of things. I think this International Year is an unparalleled opportunity. And in terms of what are our aspirations?
Why is it unparalleled?
Well, because it's a year in which you have global focus and you have global effort. And now, the risk is that it's 12 months of global focus and 12 months of global effort, and then when 2020 rolls around, it's another year for something else. And so one of the things that the steering committee, the global steering committee, is particularly focused on is what's the legacy here? So apart from a year where we focus on Indigenous languages, where we shine the spotlight on the good work that's being done and the work that needs to be done, and we have the interest and the energy of all of the member states of the United Nations, because this was, after all, a product of a General Assembly resolution, that we have all of that energy focused, well, then what next? We want to make sure that there's ongoing work. So one, from an IATSIS perspective, our aspiration goes to a few things. First of all is the visibility of Indigenous languages. If you go to some places where they're a bit ahead of the game than we're further ahead of the game than we are, so like New Zealand, you get off a plane in New Zealand, it's immediately obvious. The signage, there's dual signage, there's just visible and languages. And so we see a little bit of this happening. We see, you hear station IDs and things in local languages starting to emerge here in the country. But I hope that the focus of this year will produce much more visibility for Indigenous languages. I'd like to see some increasingly places reverting to their Indigenous names. For me, I long for the day when I can talk about Uluru and not have to qualify it by saying Ayers Rock. Just that general usage, when words start to be picked up and to be used.
It's a form. Do you think that's a form of acceptance as well?
Well, I think it's a form. I think it is. I think it is a form of acceptance, and I think that's important.
I think that if you can get the visibility, we're talking, it's not a great word, but mainstream. If you get that as a sort of habitual thing during this year, do you think that'll have some currency moving on? Could that be part of the importance of the year, that you start pushing various things so that it becomes something that people just do?
I think that's right. I've seen that happening already. Mm. And it is, without minimising or without cutting off any other avenues of redress, it's a really important form of redress that starts to recognise the knowledge and the values and the worldviews that have been here for 65,000 years.
And just one last question.
Sure.
You mentioned you're going to the UN Permanent Forum. Would it be possible, do you think, that the UN could be, you know, one of the legacies could be that you take the success of this year or some of the things that have come out, like some of the things we were talking about, language being mainstreamed, to the Permanent Forum to have that become sort of like an international phenomena? Can it work like that? Can an international year push good ideas through to benefit more people?
Oh, I think absolutely. I mentioned before, it's a great opportunity. One of the elements of that opportunity is that shared learning and knowledge exchange. And so it's one of the reasons why I think international engagement around Indigenous issues is so absolutely critical, because we can learn from one another. So we've got some things that other people might be interested in knowing how we did them. But equally, there are some really tough issues and some really deep sort of policy conundrums that we're wrestling with that perhaps other countries have wrestled with and found successful mm-hmm. solutions for.
So you'll be taking some of the Australian and regional experiences to the UN Permanent Forum?
Well, look, absolutely. And so the thing about the Permanent Forum is it's member states, but it's an enormous number of Indigenous peoples' representatives and representative bodies that go. So it is a venue where you have the states and Indigenous peoples coming together. And I think that's important. There will be a focus at this during the first week of this session on Indigenous languages. The steering committee that I'm co-chairing will meet. There'll be a number of specific events, but I understand one of the days, I think it's the first day of the Permanent Forum session, is devoted to the International Year of Indigenous Languages. Tricky thing about UN stuff is, of course, people go and they make statements, and it's making sure that those statements contribute to action. That is the real challenge. But, you know, I think, you know, I was at the launch of the International Year at the UN General Assembly back in February. The degree of enthusiasm and energy displayed by the member states at that time struck me as being particularly powerful. I think no one's interested in just having a year-long party about languages and then just leaving things to go back to the way they were. And I think that the domestic challenge for us is making sure that, you know, given where we are in our electoral cycle, that whichever government comes to office after the election in May, they are hooked into the aspirations of Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander people in this country for an ongoing legacy that brings us closer towards the strength of language capacity and capability in Indigenous Australia that we had 50 years ago, 100 years ago, 200 years ago. And I think that's really exciting. I think has the potential to transform the country.
And is this what keeps you going? Is this your passion?
Yes, it is. I think, well, my partner keeps reminding me, you know, we live in a society. And I said, yes, I know that we do. But I think having the opportunity to be able to be part of a process where Australians get to, in a sense, reimagine what does it mean to be an Australian? What does it mean to be part of this country and this place? The chance to be part of that, I find completely energising. It appeals to everything that kind of gets me going.
And language in particular?
Well, I think that's really important. I think that is. Now, I'm careful a bit about that because I think it is very important, but I don't want to... we need to be careful that we're not saying to Indigenous people who through no fault of their own and through the circumstances of history have lost the ability to use their language, that somehow they're less genuine or less authentically Aboriginal or Torres Strait Islander. I think that would be unfortunate and unhelpful. But I know, as a 53-year-old, who sat down with somebody in my office a couple of years ago, a linguist who worked on the Dungari language, my language, dictionary, and started to learn. It didn't make me more Aboriginal. It helped me connect much more with that identity. So it didn't create the identity, but it certainly reinforced it. And so now I get to sit with my grandchildren and whisper Dungari words in their ear, you know, and I sit with my granddaughter and point to her big brother and say, that's your B.I. Just things like that might just mean that that my children and my grandchildren won't have to wait until they're 51 years old before they get to engage with their language and before they get to engage with the sort of perspective-shaping ideas
that that gives you. But just to be able to find other ways to look at problems or other ways to think about situations is such a powerful thing. And why wouldn't you want to be part of shaping a country that's able to do that? And instead of, a continual sort of regressive war about our national identity and trying to lock in this very narrow, fixed, white, Anglo-Saxon sense of who we are as Australians, why wouldn't we create something that's rich and diverse and beautiful that we all can own?